This is Will's Band of the Week for June 12th, 2022. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Nicholas from the Melbourne Bureau.
Yes, I'm here, and larger than life today, larger than life.
We've been doing extensive pre-production. In fact, a near catastrophic failure of Fourth Bedroom Studios. I didn't get my studio upgrade, that's the problem. We had a little discussion. We have an arrangement, though. We're going to get some substantial royalties from Nicholas, and that's going to fund the studio upgrade that I need. We think we have it working now. We almost had to have everything in mono, which would have been just, you know, I've been listening to music over the past couple of days when I'm at my computer here. It just didn't sound right. Something just wasn't, it's just not quite that good. And figured out everything was in mono and I had to go through all kinds of diagnostics. And then I spilled a drink on my desk in the middle of the diagnostics, which was bad.
It would have been like a podcast for the 1950s.
For all I know, it's going to go
about the new Bing Crosby album. Yeah.
It might go back to mono while we're recording, or there could be a catastrophic failure and we'll have to start over. Hopefully not. I was going to ask you, Nicholas. You know, it's approaching the summer solstice here, and therefore I'm imagining it is probably about negative 10 Celsius with blustery winds and 2 feet of snow where you are. Is that about right?
Well, you might think that's an exaggeration. Apparently, someone was telling me that it's been the coldest, like, May and June since, like, the 1920s or something like that.
Really?
And we're actually planning a day trip tomorrow to a mountain that's only about 2 hours' drive from Melbourne that apparently is covered with snow.
Wow. So, I mean, you don't get, like, below freezing very often, right? Even in the winter, right?
Yeah, I mean, not in Melbourne, but we do have mountains, like a few, out, you know, with ski slopes and stuff, but they're kind of a few hours' drive from Melbourne. Mm-hmm. But we're messaging all our friends saying, have you got kids' ski gloves? Who's got ski gloves? So, yeah, it's really cold at the moment. And it's like we've just plowed into the depths of winter straight away. So there's been no ease in. So, yeah, it's very cold at the moment. And, yeah, maybe some snow tomorrow if we go for a drive.
Wow. All right. I'm going to take the Madison, Wisconsin weather for now. Basically in the 70s, whatever that translates to for you.
Warm. It's warm over there, yeah?
Yeah.
You're walking around in shorts and a T-shirt or something.
Yeah, so 72 Fahrenheit is what's considered room temperature. It's just like what you'd have like in an office building. So it's been like about that warm with some sun here and there. So it's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's like 21 degrees over here. So that's a kind of, warm. Not hot though, but warm. Okay, it's nice.
Yeah. Do we have a lot of content, right?
Always slightly too much.
You almost scored an interview, right? But I guess that didn't pan out.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. But, we've been in contact with one of our amazing local indie rock artists. And,
All right. Well, maybe. I guess, we haven't really done a Death of the Week in a while. What happens is I say there haven't been any deaths and somebody thinks of one that there was one. But we thought of two this week. And I think it's probably, I'm gonna say it's okay to play the jingle this week.
And now it's time for the Death of the Week.
What is your memory of Seals and Crofts?
I really don't know who it is that you're talking about.
I was wondering.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'd be being disrespectful if I said, is it a department store in America?
It sounds like it, doesn't it? Okay, yeah, so
don't know. Maybe I know one of their songs.
We're gonna find out soon. Okay, so Seals and Crofts were a duo, kind of a folk pop kind of duo. Jimmy Seals, they call them Jimmy. Now, when I've been reading about them, they call him Jim. Jim Seals and Dash Crofts. And these two guys had some hits in the, well, when would they be? 70s, basically. Early 70s. See, so it's probably a little before your time, because I was, you know, I was like maybe like 10 when these songs were getting played on the radio. And I kind of forgot that they didn't really have all that many hits, but they had some really big hits. I was thinking of them kind of like Hall and Oates, like kind of hit machines. Yep. But they didn't have as many hits as Hall and Oates. But I think a lot of people would know, you know, four or five of their songs. But then it depends how old you are, too. So, all right. So Jim Seals died this week, and he was, I think I read one place said he was 80, another place said 79. So basically that age.
Okay.
And, yeah, some 70s hits. And I think you tell me whether it fits the definition of yacht rock. That 70s kind of sound. I don't know if you have a feel for like what I think this might be that. But anyway, here's probably my favorite, one of their most popular songs was called Summer Breeze.
See the curtains hanging in the window. In the evening on a Friday night, little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. See the paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor. Summer breeze makes me feel fine.
Seals and Crofts. Did you recognize it?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I've got this theory. Like, I always think it's amazing how your brain can remember songs. It must be a part of your brain. How many songs do you reckon are somehow in your brain?
I have thought about that and how it's like etched into your brain like a hard drive, and it's going to be there till you die. And a lot of it will never be extracted again, but it's back there somewhere, right?
It's weird. Yeah, I feel like it's got to be at least a million songs, which sounds ridiculous, but it's like...
Right.
It's not just like 10,000 songs or 100,000 songs. Because, yeah, you play that, and it's like, oh, yeah, I recognize that song.
Right. So that's from 1972. They had another hit that same year called Hummingbird. And then in 1973, they had the two big hits, Diamond Girl and We May Never Pass This Way Again. Interestingly, Summer Breeze, it peaked at number 6 on the U.S. charts. It didn't even hit number 1. And that went, if I would have assumed, of course, that hit number 1. Mm. And then yeah, Australia, it hit number 16. So... You were exposed to it, at least, according to Wikipedia.
Definitely. I'm not sure who came up with the term yacht rock. I feel like that's only from the last 5 years.
Right. So, I'm not sure I understand
it. We weren't calling things yacht rock back then.
It seems like that would be it, whatever that means. All right, we could play the jingle again, but we don't need to double the jingle. But you had a death of the week, too. I don't even think I even read about this, and you just told me about it.
Yeah, so it's a sad one for me. So Alec John Such was the original bass player from Bon Jovi. And I guess Bon Jovi have got a special place in my heart. And now Alec John Such, the original bass player, he sort of left in the early 90s. He's now no longer with us, died at the age of 70 of apparently natural causes. But I was hearing someone else talk about this, and it's sort of like, yeah, when the musicians or members of bands that you really connected with when you were a teenager, when they start dying, there's something that happens, and I'm kind of feeling that a little bit with Alec John Such from Bon Jovi, because it's sort of like, I struggle to remember, you know, many people's birthdays. But September the 10th, 1987, is burned into my brain because that was the first kind of big concert that I went to. I would have been 13, and that was Bon Jovi when they came out to Australia on the Slippery When Wet tour. And I reckon I counted down the days to that concert for about 6 months.
My
life was never the same, really. I can't remember any other date of any other concert in my entire life. But, yeah, September the 10th, 1987, I was there, and Alec John Such would have been playing bass. So, I'm not really sure about this whole life thing, Will, you know, because we're born and then we live, and then apparently you have to just accept that at some point you die. And I'm not really quite sure if I'm ready for that. I don't even know if I've really quite accepted that into my heart, that we actually all die, and I'm sad to say that Alec John Such has died.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky. Is there any song that he was featured in that you think we should play, or should we just leave it at the oral history?
There is a cool, I've got favorite Bon Jovi songs, but there's a cool little bass intro to a Bon Jovi song that is kind of cool. So even just the first sort of like 5 or 10 seconds of the Bon Jovi song Keep the Faith has a cool bass intro, so we could play that and just think about Alec.
Good pick. That's the kind of song I hear it, you know, and like if my band is proposing playing a cover or something, I hear a bass line like that, I'm like, nope, sorry, that's a real musician playing that. I can't do that.
Right.
All right, that's sad to hear. So, well, we did these guys justice, right?
Yeah, I think we've given them the respect that they deserve, and it's always great that, you know, they've recorded this great music, like so many musicians that have passed, and the music will always be there. You can always listen to it. So that's just such a cool thing, isn't it? You can always go back and listen to what they've left us.
This is not really music news or a live report, but I've been reading about the Rolling Stones playing gigs. And the reason that I had it like pop up in my timeline is that Echo and the Bunnymen opened up for the Rolling Stones in Liverpool, and they played at this giant stadium, and it's got this great big, you know how the stadium rockers, sometimes they have like a big walkway that like, so that the singer can, or anybody can like walk all the way to the middle of the stadium in the middle there.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering, is Ian McCulloch from Echo and the Bunnymen going to walk out there? Is he going to use it? I was thinking they were in like the rehearsal room or the green room, whatever, and they're talking about it. Like, should I walk out there? I bet they're not permitted. I bet the opener is just not permitted to go out there. Well, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a no-go zone.
But Mick Jagger, so Charlie Watts just died and he was 80, I think, and Mick is like 78, and I think Keith Richards is 77. You know, I'm approximating this, it might not be right, but I read this review and they're like, yeah, they're still rocking, you know, Mick can still sing well, and I'm like, God, I wonder if they cheat with backing tracks and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's kind of amazing that they can still do it. I don't really think I would enjoy it very much. My wife, I mentioned it to my wife, and she was like really cynical because she's not really a Rolling Stones fan. I think she thinks it's beneath Echo and the Bunnymen to open for them. But when I was about 30, I cut out this article. I had it on my refrigerator because I thought it was funny. A newspaper did a graphic, and it was comparing the age of the Rolling Stones to the age of the executives at General Motors. And they were saying, you know, the Rolling Stones are as old as, like, executives at General Motors, because they were, like, they were getting into their 60s, and now they're almost 80. It's just, I mean, I guess I kind of like that. I like that there's more longevity now, and that people can actually credibly, they're going out and doing this, even though I wouldn't go see it. There are people that are, they're bringing joy to people, and, you know, that's kind of cool, right? How old's Bob Dylan? He still plays shows. He's, like, about 80. You know, Neil Young, he's rocking. So I'm all for the aging rockers.
Yeah, there's still hope for us, right, Will?
Yeah. Yep. we're trying to keep hanging on to the rock and roll as long as we can. All right, that's pretty good. Speaking of rock and roll, this is Speaking of Rock and Roll. I've got no live reports. But as usual, the correspondents come through with the live reports. And this one's pretty good. Let me spill a little like comment that I made before we started recording. Anurag should be along for this one.
So my friend Jack plays in this band, and I said, oh, yeah, cool. I want to come and check out this band. So I went. I took my earplugs. I was front row. And this is what I heard. Maybe we should just listen to it, and then we'll say who the band is. Does that sound all right, Will?
Yeah, this is
keep
a good
the
way
intrigue going.
This is a good way to introduce it. You say, and this is what I heard. Okay, you got to tell me about this friend of yours. This is fascinating.
So this is Sydney's best violent sludge band called Burial Pit.
violent sludge.
That's great. Well, that's their genre. I prefer to call them doom sludge, but violent sludge is what they call themselves. But Burial Pit is the band. Two guitars, an awesome bass player, drummer and vocalist, and they just tore the walls down, basically. There's something really to be said for going to see live music, even if it's maybe something that you don't necessarily listen to when you're at home. So I've gone through periods where I've loved heavy music. You know, I don't listen to as much heavy music as I used to. That is normally way heavier than I would get into, but that is my gig of the year so far, Burial Pit. I loved it. It was just awesome seeing it live. Look, that was an exclusive Will's Band of the Week bootleg recording.
What kind of a venue were they playing in?
So there's a place called The Old Bar, which is a little it's a bar venue in Fitzroy, kind of inner city Melbourne. You know, the stage is, you know, a pretty small stage. It's only a couple of feet high. So if you want, you can, you know, have your thighs up against the stage. And it was pretty packed with metal fans. And I've seen a few bands there. I saw Chastity Belt there a few years ago, and I think they were a little bit unhappy to be playing there, but, you know, I'm not sure what was going on for them. But they have a lot of kind of like indie and metal and rock stuff. But yeah, it's kind of a pretty cool bar venue.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I was, you know, you sent me this thing. You said it's by Burial Pit, and I'm like, oh, that sounds like a metal band, but I don't think Nicholas would be sending me a metal thing. So it must be like an oddly named band, but they sound just like that, like you would expect Burial Pit to sound, right?
I think so. I think they match their name. And all I would say to our listeners is be open to doom sludge. Or violent sludge as a genre, and if you can see any of it live, I reckon that's the way to go. I feel like some music is kind of almost better live than recorded. But we did manage to get an exclusive little message from Jack, who plays guitar in the band. I don't know, am I throwing you a curveball, Will, if I said, hey, let's hear our little message that Jack sent us?
No problem. Let's play it. I think I've got it right here.
G'day, it's Jack here from Burial Pit. Cheers, Nick, for checking out the show and bringing it to the podcast. And thanks and apologies to anyone who decides to give the record a spin. Cheers.
Apologies to anyone who decides to give the record a spin.
Jack is always saying that he makes music that makes people feel uncomfortable. So, interesting way of putting it. Subhuman Scum is their album.
All right.
Check it out on Spotify.
Oh, that's great. That is great. That's a fun...
Anyway, yeah. So Sydney's own Burial Pit. Check them out.
Oh, they're from Sydney, but they come down to Melbourne.
Yeah.
Okay, so they haven't probably played in the... What would happen if you had them at the backyard barbecue? Do you think that'd be a little dangerous? Somebody just sitting there enjoying their barbecue on a styrofoam plate, you know, just kind of enjoying the sunlight, and then Burial Pit comes on, and they're like, maybe they would just kind of embrace it.
I feel like what would happen is that all of the sausages, whether they're on the barbecue or on people's plates, would like immediately burst into flames. You'd have all these flaming sausages, and all the tomato sauce bottles would like start shooting out the tomato sauce, like a fountain of tomato sauce. It would just become sort of chaos, but it would somehow suit the music.
You know, we already have the Flaming Lips, but we could have a band called Flaming Sausages. All right, that was great. All right, I think we're ready to go on to our main selections here. Let's get this thing rocking. Let's get the rock underway. It's already underway, but yeah. We've talked about Horse Girl almost for a year now. Did you know that?
Right. No.
So, well, last July of 21, the very first show that I went to post-COVID, so I had not been to a live show in well over a year. Mm-hmm. And then they announced a show at one of our pretty good local venues called the High Noon. Horse Girl was playing, and they only had, I think they had three songs up on Bandcamp, and I listened and I thought, they sound pretty cool. I think maybe this will be my first show that I'm going to go to. So I did, and I thought they were really, really good. And then we saw them in Austin, South by Southwest in March, and really, really liked them. So here they are. The album is out, the full album, called Versions of Modern Performance. They are teenagers from Chicago. Maybe they might be, they're not quite 20 yet, I don't think. I think they're out of high school. So in the U.S. School system, people finish high school usually about age 18, and they might be about a year out now. So they're probably about 19 or so. I'm going to spill all my music journalism. I believe this was recorded at Steve Albini's studio in Chicago, but not with Steve Albini, but in his studio. And there are some songs where I noticed the drums kind of have that cool sound. And it's kind of, you go in that studio and the magic happens, right? So, should we play some of it?
Yes, sorry. Oh. I muted my microphone. I thought you were about to go to a track, but yes, I noticed the drum sound as well. Yes, it's a meaty drum sound. So,
yeah.
Interesting that they went to Steve Albini's studio. Definitely a cool sound.
Yep. There's so many tracks a person could pick. It's sort of a guitar arsenal, and it is sort of, I don't know, I think they kind of sound like Pavement sometimes, and there's better comparisons, I'm sure. But let's play, this is a hard one, because, see, I know what I'm going to play second, but I don't want to play it first, so... Let's play number 9, World of Pots and Pans. That's Horse Girl. I should have mentioned, I said Pavement, but obviously, most reviews you read say there's a Sonic Youth influence in there. And so, yeah, so I thought maybe Nicholas would like this, being a big Sonic Youth fan. I don't know if there's any band that's like a dead-on comparison, but there's, you know, influences there for sure, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's a really cool mix of lots of different bands. Like you've... See, if I listen to that, I wouldn't say, oh, yeah, they sound like Sonic Youth. I feel like people have put, like, The Breeders and, like, Smashing Pumpkins and more like Dinosaur Jr. and stuff like that. Maybe not so much the Smashing Pumpkins, but a whole lot of kind of cool 90s, mm-hmm. you know, grunge bands, I suppose.
Yeah.
Together, like, in a blender and made, like, a milkshake. And I feel like they've come out as this kind of sweet milkshake. And so when I listen to their album, I'm like, oh, do I know this song? Oh, what does this remind me of? And it's like, it reminds me of lots of different things, but I don't really know exactly what it reminds me of, even though I've said a few bands there. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like it's a cool kind of like, mix of lots of those kind of 90s bands, but then they just kind of come out sounding like themselves. So I like that.
Yeah. One thing I love about it is how their sort of soft voices mix with the crunchy guitars.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good songs, and they are this is probably a strength of the album, that a lot of them are a little bit kind of abstract and not just straightforward catchy tracks, which I think makes it sort of cool.
Yeah, there's at least one or two instrumental tracks, and that's right. It kind of breaks it up and makes it just a little bit more interesting. I guess that's exactly it. I've just repeated what you've said, but yeah. I agree. Kind of, they're obviously, got creative minds. I like that.
Well, it's that time now for you to make a pick.
Okay, cool. I'm just going to go straight to, it's a great title. It's called Beautiful Song, track 2.
That's Horse Girl, and the album is called Versions of Modern Performance. And they're rocking, and they're rising indie rockers. And so, I was reading they got a gig opening for somebody pretty established. And now I forgot who it was. But I have tickets to see them in July here in Madison with the band Dummy.
Oh, cool.
Have you listened to Dummy?
No, I don't think I know them.
They're cool. It's a cool double bill. They don't really sound similar. They're more, the band that Dummy always gets compared to is Stereolab. I think that's a cool double bill, so I'm really looking forward to it. So
yeah.
Horse Girl, cool. So we saw them at South by Southwest, and I thought they were one of the top bands that I saw, one of my favorites. We have talked about Unwritten Rules on the podcast. You know, in American baseball, they have all these things called unwritten rules. Like, well, it's not the rule, but you just don't do that, right? So one of our unwritten rules, when anybody plays track one, they have to apologize, right? And say, well, I don't think there's one more unwritten rule I'm going to violate here, and that is We usually don't play tracks, like repeat what we've played before on the podcast. But I just love this one so much that I played it. I think I played it when we were talking about the preview for South by Southwest that I was looking forward to seeing this band. It was one of the tracks that they released before the full album. And I love it so much that it's worth playing again. So here's the thing about this song. Probably the best thing about it is the great riff. It's just got a great guitar progression. But for some reason, every time I play it, it makes me want to play air drums. It's just like the drums are just so great. So listen to the riff, listen to the drums. The last song, number 12, Billy. Rock and roll.
Do you think that they get compared to Sonic Youth just because they've got a female singer?
I think there's something about the guitar work. It's not totally Thurston Moore. There are some other songs that are a little more edgy with the guitar.
Yeah,
I think it's more the guitar than the like Kim Gordon comparison.
Yeah. Right. Because their music's really catchy, and that's what I really like about it. I mean, that song reminds me of something like Buffalo Tom,
yeah,
or and the voice is a bit similar to Nico singing with Velvet Underground, but even the band Quilt, who are more of a current band that we've talked about before on the podcast, they've got a little bit of that sort of aesthetic in their voices. Which I really like. But yeah, I mean, great, just great songs, and I love it. Yeah, I love how melodic it is and how poppy and catchy it is. That's what I really like about it. And I think, that's a bit of a favorite album that I've listened to this year. Actually,
I think that sometimes you don't think about, you hear the whole thing and how it sounds like as a whole, and you don't really break it down. But what really makes a good band is if you do break it down, all the components are really strong. So, like I was saying, that just makes me want to play air drums. So, obviously, the drummer is super solid. Those riffs are great. But, the vocals are great. So, you could take that song and you could, do a stripped-down version of it. It would be really a cool song still, That's what I think. I think they're super talented. So, they've gotten a little hype. They haven't gotten hype like Wet Leg, but they've definitely gotten kind of boosted somehow I think one of them has a dad that's like in the music industry or something. So,
okay.
But, I think it's all totally justified. They're really talented, really, really fun, and hope they keep on rocking.
Totally. Yeah, cool sound.
Okay. We're above $0. There's a time I always declare that, the above $0. So I've declared it now. Everything from now is a bonus. Oh, my goodness. What? I mean, we're going to get introduced to a prominent Melbourne artist and then kind of some Melbourne veterans. So we kind of got this is a cool Australian theme we've got going. Claire Birchall, right?
Yeah, Claire Birchall apparently lives in my suburb here in Coburg, Melbourne, Australia. My friend Andy, who I make music with, he sort of stumbled across one of her gigs a few months ago and then said, hey, Claire Birchall's playing, come and check her out. And just another example of like seeing something live and just being like captivated and like being so impressed with just seeing someone on stage. And we've actually got a live clip that we're going to listen to, but I kind of feel like, you know, have you ever like seen like a few, like gone to a gig and there's like maybe two or three bands and one of them just stands out to you? And Claire was the person who stood out to me amongst the other bands that supported her. When she played on stage, it was just her. And this is what kind of intrigued me, just hearing the description of the fact that it was just her and her keyboards and like a drum machine and some loop pedals and stuff. She also played electric guitar, but just her with all of her gear on stage. And I could just tell, wow, her music is just totally her and totally just kind of like flowing through her in just a really natural and kind of authentic way. And I suppose that's what I loved about it. It was just felt really authentic. And really liked her new album, which is quite different from what she was performing. But I don't know, should we have a track from her album and then we might listen to some of the bootleg recording that I made?
Sure.
Maybe we'll start with track two, Take It Easy, Mary Jane. This is from her album that's called, is it Electricity? Yes, Electricity is the album by Claire Birchall. Let's have a listen to it. Yeah, Take It Easy, Mary Jane.
Claire Birchall from the album Electricity, Take It Easy, Mary Jane.
Yeah, I've been. I said hello to Claire briefly at the end of her gig, and just sent her a few messages asking her about her album because I really loved the sound of it, particularly. And she recorded it all herself at home, mainly on her four-track cassette recorder. Did some overdubs on her computer, but yeah, mainly on her four-track. And I thought it's a great sounding album. There's some kind of heavier guitar parts with huge feedback and stuff like that, and really impressed with just the sonicness of it. But great, great tracks. And I guess her voice is the thing that also just really impressed me, particularly live. And I just felt like it was very emotional when she sang. It was quite kind of moved. Which I feel like I'm rarely moved by singers. So when she sang, and I just felt, wow, she really means what she's singing. So I really loved that about her performance, particularly.
I think most people would say they're moved by singers more than any other member of the band, but you are more moved by the guitars. So when a singer gets to you, that's saying something, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Is now a good time to play the live clip? I'm talking a lot about her performance that we saw. Is now a good time to flick over to that and we have a little taste of Claire Birchall live?
I think
live in Melbourne.
I think any time is a good time.
Okay.
I think I thought of an idea for your next jingle. The lo-fi bootleg of the week. Right? They don't talk about bootlegs anymore because I guess everything is a bootleg, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Everyone's got a phone in their pocket, so everything gets recorded.
It used to be this thing, this radical thing, of course, popularized by the Grateful Dead, where people would carry around, people would have a suitcase full of cassettes of Grateful Dead shows. I had a suitcase full of cassette. Did you ever have one of those? It literally was like a briefcase, but it held cassettes. I had a couple of those. They were really cool. They would hold maybe like 30.
A cassette caddy was what we used to call them.
Oh, okay.
I think I had a long one. It was like, so it would be one row of cassettes.
Oh.
And you'd lift up the lid and it would just be like, so it was long and narrow, almost like a shoebox.
Okay, I think mine had at least two rows and was more rectangular shaped. I think I have a couple down in my basement still. Yeah, really cool. So anyway, there you go. That's a bootleg. Okay, I got to say this. You stole my pick. I'm like, okay, clearly the catchiest best track on this album is number two, Take It Easy, Mary Jane. And you stole it. So I was thinking, all right, what if he steals it? He might steal it. I was thinking that might happen. And I thought if he does, I'm just going to have to break that unwritten rule and play number one. How do you know? You probably should play when they have a track called "Rock and Roll Girl." You should probably play it, right?
It's a great track.
Is that justified? Okay, I'm going to do it. Here it is. Claire Birchall, the album is called Electricity. She doesn't shy away from the crunchy guitars, does she?
Loves a good fuzzed out, yep. Fuzzed out electric guitar.
Yep.
Turn the fuzz up to maximum.
And that's not a combination you often see with the, you know, the single artist up there with some loops and stuff. It's usually more synthy. They don't usually do the crazy fuzzed out stuff, so it's pretty fun.
Yeah, the album's more guitar fuzzed out guitar. The album like that, like those couple of tracks we've heard live. She was definitely more the kind of dark electro kind of feel, more and playing lead synthesizer and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, her sound live was quite different in a way to the majority of her latest album. Although she's got other albums that are maybe a bit more of that dark, kind of dark electro kind of thing. I remember when I was watching her play, I kind of thought, oh, it's almost like Nirvana as a kind of an electro 80s artist in a really good way.
Yeah, it's fun to hear the different combinations, isn't it?
Yeah.
I agree she's got a great voice too, though. It's kind of powerful and it kind of matches the power of the whole sound she's creating.
But great songwriter, great artist, obviously producing awesome music herself. Just read a little bit. I mean, she plays with Kim Salmon, who's a bit of an aging rocker here in Melbourne, and has also played gigs with Adelita, who's the singer from 90s Melbourne band Magic Dirt. So yeah, she's obviously friends and collaborator of some other great artists here in Melbourne, but yeah, doing her own thing, which is cool. So yeah, check out Claire Birchall, a nice person too.
Want to play one more track?
Sure. This is maybe a little bit more of that kind of dark electro feel. There's a track of hers on the new album. The album's called Electricity, and this is a track called Luna.
Thank you.
Claire Birchall, did we do her justice?
I hope so. She's got heaps of releases available on Bandcamp, including cassettes and CDs. Yeah, she's got lots of singles and at least a couple of albums to check out.
There are so many, and the graphics are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and when I looked at it, I thought of one thing that I wish Bandcamp would do, which is to subcategorize albums and singles. Because it just says, here's a release, and then you have to scroll, and a lot of them are singles. And I was like, I would like to see, like, first set of releases to be, like, albums, because I'm an album kind of guy, you know. But minor complaint. There's a lot there, yeah. It's cool. All right, that was pretty great. And I love that when you bring the local Melbourne flavor to the podcast.
Cool.
So, I was going to ask you, what kind of a venue was she playing at?
There's a place called George Lane, which is in St Kilda, which is a kind of a groovy beach suburb. I'd never been there before. It was a kind of a loungy kind of bar. So kind of a big room, but there was kind of couches, you know, couches and tables. So all very kind of dimly lit, but still with a stage and a good PA, and kind of a wide, sort of the room was kind of wider than it was deep. But yeah, kind of a loungy kind of bar.
When we talk about live shows and we do live reports, and I think it's sort of an underrated characteristic, just the character of the venue.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So I love it when Craig tells us about the different types of venues that he sees. And I think it's really, you know, it has to be interesting for a band going on tour and they're playing night after night, but every venue has its own little character to it, right? I mean, some are, and you know, it's not like there's any one venue that's going to be like so different from any other like rock and roll place that you would play. But I think it's just kind of cool, the contrast and how a venue can just sort of shape the whole atmosphere of what you're seeing. So.
Yeah, I guess there's no real kind of there's nothing it's not like supermarkets that are kind of standardized in a way with the shelving and the lighting and stuff like that. In a way, live venues they're not standardized at all.
Right, which is really fun, I think.
It's cool.
All right, check out Claire Birchall, the Melbourne Artist of the Week. Wait a minute, but maybe not. Because there's competition in this category from some indie rock veterans. Now, twice in the past on the podcast, I believe, at least twice.
I think it's three times,
three,
actually.
Yeah, I couldn't find the third one, and it seemed like there was a third one, yeah. Does that mean this is number four? Appearance number four?
I think it might be.
Okay, so they're podcast favorites, indie rock veterans, Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever. And their name is too long, so they a lot of times are called Rolling Blackouts CF. I kind of like that. I kind of like that name because it gives half of the full name.
Yeah.
And they've been kind of a favorite of mine since their first release. They had a couple of EPs that were both great, and then a full album that was good, and their output is very consistent. And I think I've told this story on the podcast that I saw them in Glasgow, so it was really cool because I'm like however many thousand miles from my home, and then I'm seeing this band that's from probably many more thousand miles away, and we're converging. It was just so cool. And I don't know if they have a what did you say was the there was a genre description for Claire Birchall? It was a gloom sludge or something like that. No, it was Burial Pit, right?
About Burial Pit, right. And I called them Doom Sludge.
Doom Sludge, yeah. Okay, so I love it when they come up with a name for their own, like they've got a description, right? So I think I, on one of the previous podcasts, I called Rolling Blackouts Coastal Fever Power Jangle, because that's kind of how I think they are. They're kind of, they've got a power to them, but they're also kind of a jangle pop band. So that's a scary term for Anrock. So I don't know if he's going to like this or not. He probably knows already whether he likes them. I don't know. Got to hear about that. They've got a new album, Endless Rooms. I've had a very, very busy week, and I'm like, I wanted to listen to this like three or four times all the way through, and I didn't get enough time. So I listened to it a couple times, and I'm like, all I know is I kind of like it. I'm more than kind of like it. I definitely like it. I feel like I read a review that said all of their albums are the same, but they're all good. So it's like they don't really deviate from what they do, but they have at least three songwriters and singers, and they kind of mix it up, and it all goes into this big mix, and then they rock out.
Mm.
So, we've talked about them. Melbourne band, you should have ownership of this band, Nicholas. So we're gonna find out what Nicholas says. But I think if you don't mind, I'll make a pick.
Do it.
There's a song on here that I really like that is maybe not the most characteristic because it's a little slower than their typical song, but super catchy, and I think it's great. Number four, Caught Low. That's Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever. The new album is called Endless Rooms. Maybe the bass is what I love about it. I love like a lot about it. But the bass player is great. It's moving all over the place, and it's not always the obvious notes you would expect. It's cool.
It just kind of grooves along. I find it a little bit hard to describe their music and what I like about it as well. But yeah. When you watch them play, they're really kind of, I don't know, it sounds stupid, but they're really into it. And so I think they're feeling it pretty, pretty deeply when they're playing. And yeah, I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, there's usually a reason when a band is successful or becomes really popular and keeps putting out albums that lots of people like, you know, there's usually a reason. I think the reason is that they're a quality band, you know.
Right.
They put out good music and they write great songs and they sound good. So that's why lots of people like them, because they're good.
Right. I like them because they're good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And live, they have this super energy And a lot of what you would traditionally call a jangle pop band have sort of a shoegaze element in that they kind of just stand there and play their stuff, right?
Yeah.
These guys are just kind of, they're moving a lot. And I think I said this before, there's a lot of kinetic energy. It's just, it's great. So if you like the music, that's it's a great live band too. So what are we going to play, Nicholas?
Well, this is an example of, I reckon, when a guitar part can make a song super catchy. So, this song, the lead guitar part is just like one of my favorite kind of moments of the album, really. So this is, I was a bit afraid that you were going to pick this song, so I'm glad you didn't. Track 6, it's called Deep Dive.
Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever. How do you think they even came up with that name? I mean, it's like, how could you even, it seems impossible to even conceive of.
I feel like they came up with two band names that they couldn't decide between, so they decided to put them both together.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. And yet somehow it kind of works, right? Because it's, because there's no other band with any band, any name, anywhere, anything like that, so... I don't know.
Well, you could almost draw a comparison to their music. So listening to that then, I was like, yeah, you know, there's actually a lot to listen to. So I was talking about like that lead guitar line. But then when they play a line, there's actually three people playing guitar. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like there's lots that you can listen to. You can listen and you're loving the bass. Yeah. And then I was listening to even just like the backing vocals and where the backing vocals kind of come in and where they drop out. And then the lyrics themselves and then the structure of the song. I feel like in a way you can kind of just sit back and let their music just kind of like wash over you. But mm-hmm. then you can dive into it and listen to any of those little details. So I feel like there's a lot, in a way there's kind of lots of, yeah, it's quite detailed and just lots of cool elements that are part of their music that you can, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Unpick or something like that.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think they, three guitars, three singers, all kinds of just parts all meshing together. It's cool. And live, they tend to emphasize the kind of the faster and louder stuff, and they're just mm-hmm. super energetic and really great. So, all right, I'll play one. Let's go to number 10, Vanishing Dots. Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever. I think that song, you know, was maybe a little bit better representation of what they're like live, kind of energetic, but still, I don't know, in character with what we've been saying, right?
Yeah, they're almost like, you know, in an engine when there's pistons just going up and down the whole time. It's kind of what they're like live.
Yeah. And they're really fun to watch. We haven't mentioned the drummer, but he's great too. It's just like a lot of energy going on.
Yeah, I did see them. I guess it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And they're hard working, and they play great. Great. I guess their lead guitar player really stood out to me as like, wow, he's awesome. But yeah, great band live.
All right, cool. All right, that's three artists, and we got to try to, you know, finish this up before the listeners leave, right? Before they delete the file.
I reckon.
So you know, what I was thinking, you know, you sent me these alternative jingles for the bonus song of the week.
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
okay,
this would be a perfect time to play them, but I don't have them queued up properly. So I think we have to just play the normal one. But one of these weeks, I'll play one of those. You sent me like two or three. it was great. Like the B-side, you know, whatever, obscure recordings.
I don't know that they're really that different from each other, but yeah.
Yeah. So, well, let's just go with a standard.
Cool.
It's the bonus song of the week. It's the bonus song of the week.
Well,
yeah,
I'm turning it over to you because I haven't even picked one. And I thought, well, maybe either it's going to be just totally last minute, which I kind of came up with some ideas here. I think I'm going to be able to come up with one, but you need to go first.
Okay. Yeah, I'd forgotten to prepare this, but I do actually have one. I think I thought about it a week ago. For some reason, I decided to go back and listen to the band from the 90s, Morphine. Do you guys know Morphine?
I remember them, yeah. Mm. Yep.
Yeah. I feel like they, in the mid-90s, there was a couple of their songs that used to get played on the radio. And in the last few years, I've kind of kept on going back to them and just kind of keep liking them, I suppose. I kind of feel like they're a band that I won't listen to constantly, but every time I go back to them, I'm like, yeah, I like this band. And sadly, their sort of singer, bass player, and leader, Mark Sandman, passed away many years ago as not an old person at all. I think he might have had cancer and, yeah, died like 20 years ago or something like that. But they've got a great back catalogue, and I was just kind of diving into it a bit more, and there's a great song of theirs called Claire, which is, it's a great song. And I think I kind of feel like Morphine are one of those bands that lots of people kind of knew and lots of people were into in the 90s, but probably one of these bands that kind of maybe is a little bit forgotten. So let's not forget Morphine. And, let's have a listen to their song Claire. Liked much anyway.
it's Morphine. That must be a deep cut, because I know I knew songs by them, but that didn't sound familiar.
Yes, that was a deep cut. That's what we like here on the podcast.
Right, absolutely.
Morphine, three-piece, so bass, drums, and saxophone. Apparently the saxophone player used to play two saxophones at the same time sometimes. And Mark Sandman used to have a bass with just two strings on it sometimes and played like slide bass, which is kind of cool and weird. Just reading a little bit about him. He died in 1999, horribly. Had a heart attack during a concert in Italy in 1999 and died instantly.
Wow.
God, which is a pretty full-on way to go. But great artist and great band. I just kind of feel like they got lots of cool songs and lots of music to check out. So a good 90s band to not forget about, Morphine.
Cool, that's great. Well, I was trying to come up with something, and I thought, okay. So I started scrolling down my music collection, and I thought, okay, we talk about Guided by Voices and how there's way too much music, and Robert Pollard can't stop himself, and you know he needs a filter and all that stuff, and there's way too much. But it's interesting, I probably mentioned this before, but I think that the one side project that he's done that's really pretty solid is called Boston Spaceships. They had four albums, and because of course they never wait very long between releases, so it's four albums. The first one was 2008, and the last one was 2011. So it's all condensed in that time frame, but it's all pretty good. I think it's, if you're going to go into Robert Pollard's stuff, the consistency is better than a lot of his output. There's too much of it, so there's great stuff, but you have to filter it, you know. So I decided, well, let's go back and listen to something by Boston Spaceships. And I thought, how am I going to decide what to play out of all those tracks? I've got it's like 90 songs. So what do you pick? So you go in your music program, you see one that you played the most. Looks like Canned Food Demons from the album The Planets Are Blasted from 2009. Let's give that one a try. That was not the whole song, but apparently, there's about 10 more seconds of fade out that you missed. So Boston Spaceships, actually, I'm pretty sure the drummer is this drummer from the Decemberists. So check that out, see if I'm right.
Okay.
Some pretty great stuff. I think Robert Pollard is a power pop master, but just that, you know, he puts out too much stuff, so nobody can, you know. There just needs to be a curator or something. I don't know. But like the best, every 2 years, he's going to have like 5 or 6 albums, put together the top like 12 tracks and be just great. So anyway, Boston Spaceships is a great side project, so I recommend that. There you go. Bonus song of the week.
Love it.
Okay. Did we do everything justice? I think we did.
I think we did. Yep. It was good.
Do you think, how's my editing going to go this week? I'm not sure. Stopped recording, started recording. I don't know. I think it's going to work. We'll see. The listeners will find out, right?
It'll be fun.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nicholas. We will be back with you sooner this time, right? It's been like a few weeks, so let's make it not so long next time.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's always good to be back and great to chat, great to dive into some music. So always lots of fun.
All right. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.